Can't put a fence in the front yard. So my point would be.
You cannot fence your front yard? Is that what you just said?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Is that correct to your end?
Yeah, is that a covenant?
Is that a covenant?
I don't know, too.
Because we have height restrictions in the front yard.
We just have a height restriction of 4.5 feet in the front yard, unless it's non-view or anything, it can be raised to 6 feet. It is 50% okay.
So, John, what were you referring to when you said people could not fence their front yard?
That's why I want a clarification on. I mean, typically you can't put a fence, in your front yard. You got to put it, extending from the building face line. So the term might be different in that regard. I don't
know. Yeah. I'm seeing heads nodding and shaking in ways that make me think it's in the county is different and they could fence it if they wanted to. They just have a height requirement.
Yeah, and there's a different height requirement for fencing at intersection of streets. There's a vision triangle. There might be a different height requirement there, but it's permitted. It just has to be a certain height.
That doesn't help the adjoining landowners concerned. If they were concerned, they'd have to do a fence at their own farm.
Isn't there a steel fence, steel and wire?
Where?
The farmland, at least.
Is that going to stay? I don't know who owns that fence in the town.
That's a good question.
Well, as you're looking at it in terms of maintenance, the middle section is to your right. So half of that fence belongs to Mr. Friedrich and half of that fence belongs to Mr. Riley.
This is
maybe that's the question.
This is Sean Bailey again. I think you're referring to the fence that's on 170th Street?
No.
The fence to the east,
the
John.
Oh, the east. Yes, okay. Yeah, you were correct.
So the landowner would have to move it back away from the lot line to create a new fence or something like that if he wanted to have a fence there.
So.
And that would be his cost. So that would be.
And you're saying the lot owner as opposed to the farmer?
No, farmer.
Okay, thank you. I just
farmer
was first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The town.
Yeah.
I mean,
you might want to say
that. Yeah. Supervisor, have you just noted that any fencing has to go through the homeowners association design committee for approval as well?
Thanks. Yes.
For
I thought I saw that in there.
Yeah.
Well, if it's on that property, because that's what the property it was.
I'm going to pull up the current condition map that shows the existing fencing.
Okay.
And zoom in on it.
Do you understand? If it's on the lot line, it's on the developed land.
Right,
if it's on the farmer's land, she can do whatever.
Right. But I just wanted to pull up. I knew I saw fencing specifically in the covenants. Wanted to pull up what the language actually said.
Good memory. Good catch.
I didn't catch the no chain link because we just put more chain link.
So the town would want to take, and I apologize to the people on the phone that you're listening. It's been a long time. We've got a lot of questions. It's really detailed. I sense that we're going to need to take about a 5-minute break before we get to you. However, if that's all right, if you can hang in there, maybe you want a break as well. But Amelia's pulling up some language, and then I think she's about done with her presentation. We'll take a break.
I am.
Okay.
I was just trying to pull up the existing current conditions map that shows where existing fencing is. I think the property line, though, however, is darker than the fence.
Oh, yeah.
So we can't see it if it is there or not. So I apologize.
Okay, I'm going to call a break now. We'll try to be back in 5 minutes. It might take just a little longer. So please, I'm going to leave the phone open. So stay on. Okay, it's been about 5 minutes, and all the board members are back, and the presenters are back in the boardroom. I did have one other question that I wanted to ask that I forgot. And that was that at one point I was told that because county conservation was going to have costs involved in managing this property, and I've seen an itemization of the cost, and I have a question about it, but also that there would be in the HOA, the Homeowners Association agreement, a $250 annual conservation fee, which would help to do that. And I've been told, I think I heard last week, that that's no longer going to be there, so the county can rely on that. So I wanted to ask for a little clarification on that.
I think that would be a good question to refer to the county attorney.
Ethan, are you still on?
Yes, I'm here.
Is that okay? Ethan?
This was a discussion concerning the Homeowners Association paying a conservation fee.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the question?
Yeah.
So I was trying to find a case this morning when we were talking, but Amelia and I, when we both Mike, reviewed some of the case law. There's a case out of West Des Moines where the conservation fee was tried and it wasn't upheld by the court. I was trying to find it this morning. Without having an opinion to refer you to, it's just based on my recollection.
Okay.
And my personal opinion that that's not supported by the case law.
Okay, thank you. And
having the Homeowners Association lot owners pay for an adjoining property conservation fee.
Okay. And that's fine. I certainly don't want to argue with legal advice. I just wanted to make sure that I understood that there was not going to be that money that we had thought we were going to get to manage this property. Now, Mike, you had I saw at the last conservation meeting, you had $36,000 cost first year and 18 subsequent years, something like that. Is that correct? Somewhere in that vicinity. I don't know if I have my notes for that or not. Hi, Mike, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. That is correct, is those rough figures. What it includes is development of that trailhead, that parking lot, et cetera, that first year. And then it includes staff time for management, and it includes basic operating costs. So, it's going to fluctuate, but it will have some modest costs associated. If you took out the labor costs, then the labor costs are about $10,000 of that.
Mm-hmm.
So new expenditures would be roughly $8,000 on an annual basis, and then roughly $25,000 on a first year basis.
So the labor was existing staff, not additional staff who would be hired, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, then I do have another question. Goat fence supplies, $1,350 one time. Are you thinking about having goats manicure this area? Is that we have goat fence?
Yeah, I think that this area kind of creates some, has some obstacles, if you will, for different types of management. And goats would be one tool that we would use. So, that would buy some goat fencing that we would use to keep the goats in, say, if we wanted to have them graze a certain section of a prairie, then we would need to get that fence. So,
Has somebody offered those goats to you free of charge? Because I remember when Ames rented them for Ada Hayden, they were pricey.
They can be. We've used different vendors for goats over the years.
Okay.
And right now, the vendors we are using are charging us, $2 per head per month.
Really? That's cheap.
Yeah.
Don't tell Aaron. That is very cheap.
So pretty nominal.
$4 and they eat it, right?
I will say that the goats that maybe you're familiar with, Linda, are a little more effective at removing woody vegetation than the goats we've been using.
Okay. If you can't burn, you're not going to be able to burn this. So you're going to have to use goats. You're going to have to use
I wouldn't say we're not going to be able to burn it. I think that one of the things that we were very cognizant of at the outset of this is that getting back to, I think it was yours or Laura's concern and question earlier on, is that the homeowners in here are going to need to know that we're going to manage this as a prairie, which might include fire at different times, prescribed fire. And so we haven't ruled fire out. We think that that's an important management tool as well. But goats present yet another opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And I could see people having medical concerns about fire, which you don't think about when you're out in the country because people aren't at this density.
So if I can just follow up just on this conversation, not having the documents that Supervisor Merkin has about the cost and whatever, okay?
It was on the conservation board.
That's what I figured. It was on the conservation board. Okay. So my question for you is, do you feel you now, between this and I guess consulting with the county attorney, now have a better feel for what the real cost on acquisition and ongoing will be on this? Because we're here at the end of the process and just hearing about some cost changes and legal changes. So I want to make sure that as far as you're in place now and we know what this is really going to cost us.
Yeah, I think that these estimates, what I just described, if you exclude the existing labor, roughly $25,000 and on a first year basis, and roughly $8,000 on an ongoing basis is very close estimate.
Okay, super. Then that's Conservation Board's issue to deal with.
Were there any other questions either of the other supervisors had?
I guess my only question I had, not necessarily directly on this one, but I did have a question on, so we went from 56, I'm kind of taking a step back from the 56 to 70 lots. What was the reasoning to increase it by 14 more lots? Because that would have been right before I came on.
Okay, and the supervisor still left, you voted for it. I'll take a stab at least, okay. So the economics of it, the land was pricey. And according to the developer, I'm not putting my judgment on it. I'm talking about what kind of transpired and what was said. And so that there was a need for a particular return. I don't feel the developer felt he was going to get his return or he was going to end up having to build out of even higher out of a price range without those additional lots.
Gotcha. Thank you.
I just checked the recommended conditions for the Planning and Zoning Commission left. So they unanimously recommended approval with 8 conditions. The first condition can be struck because it requires county conservation board approval, and they have also unanimously approved the documents that were presented to them. So the second condition is that demolition debris that was located in the site review in the vicinity of Lot 53, kind of like a really old farm stuff, be removed. There's some shingles and other remnants left there. The protective subdrain for Lot 52 be added to the plat. And note that if per the site evaluation conducted by a certified engineer or soil professional for the soil evaluation that's submitted as part of the final plat, those locations change, the subdrain plan will be. That the Board of Supervisors, and this is a condition that had to do with two separate TIF requests. Mm-hmm. So this would also change to state that here's the amended one. The Board shall determine amended to pay for the right turn lane on 170th at 500 as part of the preliminary plat. And you could also amend this if you wanted to add on further a mechanism. Mm-hmm. we've encouraged to have homeowners install security systems, kind of smoke detectors for early detection of fire. The seventh is that the need for a right turn lane on 500 at 170th shall be monitored after full build-out of the development, and the Board of Supervisors may take action first on the final plat for the last phase of the development to determine who should pay for a turn lane decision. And the eighth is the Prairie Valley Developer or Homeowners Association is responsible for costing any future roadway connections if adjacent lands are funded. So this would be the third alternative, approval of conditions recommended by the Planning and Zoning Commission as amended by staff to amend the fifth condition from the first condition. That is for the major subdivision preliminary plat. You can take a separate action on the resolution for the CPC plan amendment and separate action on the ordinance. They were recommended for approval without conditions, the CPC plan and the ordinance for the rezoning. The ordinance needs to have second consideration set for the 26th. So that's the first condition. Any other questions?
No. Let's turn to, I have four people who wanted to speak. And if you're still on, I have Roy Riley, David Stein, Kurt Friedrich, and John Johnson. So, Rory, are you still on the phone? And if so, can you unmute yourself?
Kurt hasn't responded yet. He's an applicant. I mean,
you want Kurt to respond? Okay. Yeah. Excuse me, folks. I've gotten some advice here.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, but Roy, we're going to do this a little differently. The applicant, Kurt Friedrich, is on the phone. We're going to let Kurt speak first, and then Rory, then David, then I'll open the public hearing, and we'll listen to Roy Riley, David Stein, and John Johnson. So, Kurt, as applicant, are you on?
Remind him to unmute.
All participants are muted. All participants are unmuted.
Okay, you're unmuted. Kurt,
hello.
Yes, Kurt.
Hello, this is Kurt.
Go ahead and speak, and I'm sure we have a thumping noise back again. You'll have to talk over it. And anybody else who's still on the line, would you please unmute, because we're getting a lot of, please mute, Kurt, or mute, please, because we're getting a lot of peripheral noise here. Okay, Kurt, we're going to go ahead.
Thank you, Susan.
Go ahead.
Thank you, supervisors, and thank you for all the time. I will try to be sensitive to additional time here in my comments. And, of course, if there are any questions, please don't hesitate to ask later on. But as is our practice, we've always been extremely transparent and collaborative in the way that we operate. And so we have, from the moment that we started this process back in 2018, have invited collaboration with all of the different parties involved here. And I guess to begin with, I just wanted to say thank you to all of the people, planning staff, Conservation, Margaret, Darren, Fox Engineering, everyone that's been involved in getting us to where we are today. And truly, this is a unique and special project, and never in the history of our company have we been involved in a project quite like this, where better than 50% of the land within the neighborhood or the proposed neighborhood would be set aside as permanent
park land in perpetuity. And so this has just been a unique partnership, if you will, as we got direction from the Board of Supervisors back in 2018 to try to create a development here with 70 home sites and preserve prairie remnants that were identified on the site. And I will say these are Dr. Rosberg's words, and I know Mike could chime in on this as well, but this land, just the history here, it's been grazing land for decades. And it's been treated harshly. And the prairie remnants that were identified here were degraded remnants due to all of the traffic that has been pounding these slopes for years and years. And so what we're now putting together here in partnership with the county is a way of preserving the remnants and protecting and providing an environment to cultivate and for these remnants to thrive. So they will be much, much better than what currently exists. And that goes for water quality as well. We are putting in place in alliance here with your stormwater plans and ordinance, we are creating an opportunity to really clean the water, unlike it's been done before. So, to borrow Gary's comments early on, I think we'll be able to create something here that will truly provide satisfaction to the homeowners, as well as satisfaction to the public and meet a great public good. So we follow the guidance that we received, and without exception, we have met or exceeded the requirements and the conditions that were placed on the approval back in 2018. And we have implemented the county's new conservation subdivision ordinance, which Jerry did a nice job, and Amelia as well, of describing what conservation development really looks like. It is more of a clustered style of development, and lots tend to be a little smaller. And as we went through this process from November of 2018, the set-aside land that we had imagined at that point in time has increased significantly. And our design has changed. It's gone through many, many different iterations to get to where we are today. And that's been in accordance with the conservation subdivision ordinance, which will be used now for the first time, and in alignment with the various contours of this property, so as to, again, protect and preserve the natural landscape that exists. So I think it's really been, it's really a testament to the Fox and conservation and all of us putting our heads together, quite frankly, and coming up with a designer that I think is truly unique and special. And I hope everyone recognizes the uniqueness of this and the uniqueness of this opportunity. And yes, we do need to make a profit on the project. And so, to Loris's point, we do have to have density. And when we set that number at 70 2 years ago, we frankly did not foresee a lot of the costs that have been placed on the project through the different iterations that we have gone through. And so we need to have a certain amount of density. And then also in this process, it was determined that there would be a dedication of land. And I think that's really exciting that we will have a wonderful park alongside residential land. But again, yeah, these were all things that developed over that time. So there's been a process that we've gone through, and it's evolved, and we are where we are today because of that process. And I'm glad with what we have here. I do think that, as John said, and as the Planning and Zoning Commission noted, that it would be really a travesty to place additional costs on the backs of the development for turning lanes where officials were talking about a maybe increase in traffic that would maybe warrant the improvement.
Excuse me.
Where 85% of these, of the need for the potential to warrant already exists.
Excuse me a second, Kurt. Whoever is not on mute, could you please mute your phone? You're not talking because we're getting a lot of background noise. Okay, Kurt, I'm sorry for the interruption. Why don't you continue?
Thank you. So the lone piece of this that really doesn't make sense to me here, and it didn't make sense to the Planning and Zoning Commission either, was that with 85% of the warrant already existing for a potential turn lane, and again, we're talking about 1 to 8 cars. So just want to keep this in perspective, 1 to 8 cars, and we're talking about significant expense that would be asked to be placed on the back of the development. That is just not fair. And so I'm asking for the supervisors to consider fairness in their decision here. And I will also, and you know probably, just look back here over the last week, and the culmination of all of our work to get to this point, the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended unanimous approval of our preliminary plat. The Conservation Board met last Monday and recommended unanimous approval. They're very, very excited about this project, as are we. And Gilbert also recommended approval and waiver of the community subdivision authority on the project. So we are hopeful in this uncertain time that the supervisors would be excited about this kind of an opportunity too, and that we would be able to work together to advance this wonderful project. And frankly, there's a tremendous need. We're down to just 5 remaining home sites in Cameron Estates right now. And there's really nothing else of this kind of development with larger lots, larger home sites. And what's nice about our design, frankly, is we've got a range. They range from a minimum of 0.5 acre up to about 1.5 acres. So we've got opportunity to, even within our design, offer some different price points, which I think is really an important thing in any subdivision. So with that, I will wrap up my comments and again ask for your approval of our preliminary plat. And with the condition that the traffic improvements that were contemplated, that before placing additional burden on the development, that there would be additional discussion or review at a subsequent date in the future as we are working through the project to see whether or not that is really warranted. And again, consider fairness in this process too. 85% of the warrant already exists. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kurt. And I'm sorry for the background noise. Let me again ask if there's anybody on the phone who is not muted. We're catching conversations, side conversations in the back. So if you, anybody who is not muted, would you please mute your phone now before we start the public hearing? Okay. I still think I might hear somebody, but it's better. Okay, I'm now going to open the public hearing on this matter, and I'm going to call on Rory Riley, who's the first person who texted. Rory, are you there? And please, you
know, I am.
Okay, thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. What would you like to tell us?
Okay, first thing I'd like to say is if you want to talk about unfair, I'm going to give you some reasons it's unfair. It's not towards the developer. My name is Rory Riley. My address is 50610 170th Street, Ames. I would like to address a few things that I think are wrong with the development of the property that lies directly out my back door.
Can you talk a little louder, Rory? I've got to as high as I can, but somebody can't hear you.
Okay. I'll lean in a little closer to the phone. Is that better?
Yes.
I have lived here for 34 years, farming and raising cattle. I have watched as both the city of Ames and Gilbert grew, which we all know is inevitable due to many factors, employment, quality of life in Iowa, Iowa State University, etc. But the county's C2C plan is being trampled by this decision to rezone this property. The county's own rules are designed to protect good farmland and ensure that development is done sensibly, contiguous to the existing development and sensitive to the predominantly rural nature of the area. Please tell me how the development of this property, the former Dawson Farm, meets the criteria of our C2C plan. There's a lot of background noise going on.
I know. All right. I can hear you, but again, just wait a second, Rory. People who are on the phone, please mute your phone. We're hearing conversations, and it's hard to hear the person who's presenting.
Can you mute everybody again, and I'll do the star six.
Okay, I'll try that.
All participants are muted, and they can unmute themselves.
Now can you hear me?
Yeah, very good. Thank you for helping us troubleshoot this, Rory. You said, okay, please continue.
Okay. Last week, I listened to the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. There was a member of the commission that asked the question of what is the plan to keep the children away from the livestock that are in the pasture to the east of the development. These are my cattle, she was referencing. She said she knows how children are when livestock are near, as she has seen it many times. A member of the planning and zoning staff answered that there is a 50-foot buffer barrier being used between the development and my livestock. The chairman of the planning and zoning then asked a member of the board if that answered her question. She replied, yes. This is your solution and sensitivity to surrounding agriculture? The talk of a buffer zone between my cows and calves of 50 feet is absurd. Anybody that thinks differently on this matter is out of touch with agriculture and has not been raising cattle for the last 34 years. 50 feet is less than three small 17-feet living rooms put end to end. It's really nothing being put between a bull, cow, calf, and children. About 3 years ago, I came upon a newborn calf that had gotten off away from the herd, and as I slipped it back under the woven fence, it became a tangled electric fence, which I have on the inside of the woven wire fence to keep the cattle in. Cattle apparently have a different cry when under duress or threat, because when I looked up, I had all 58 cows coming to rescue them. It doesn't happen often, but it does happen. You learn from that experience. What would happen to some child if they somehow threatened a cow? A lawyer for an injured or dead child, no matter if there is a 50-foot buffer or how many fences I have, would say it is inadequate. The liability risk of raising cattle next to this development makes me uninsurable as a practical matter, given the premiums. What is a buffer anyway? Is it a berm?
for children to play King of the Mountain on, will be someone's backyard, or will be tall grass for children to play hide and seek in. There's not any explanation. Reflecting on how this came about, I look back at my attendance at the December meeting of the Board of Supervisors in 2018 when this was rezoned from agriculture to residential. We were told there was a full agenda that day because of the hog confinement being proposed north in the basin. But we would have all the time we needed to make our opposition heard by Acting Chair Rick Sanders. John Johnson, my neighbor, was told he would be first to speak and I would be second. John was given his research on the density of the proposed development, and he was told we would have to make it brief halfway through his comments. I was told that I would also have to make mine brief. I didn't say anything about it then, but was thoroughly offended by this. How is that for being sensitive toward all agricultural interests? Does that due process article of the Constitution not apply to my right of being fully heard? As I look back at the meeting, the board didn't want to hear what we had to say, as they had already made up their mind. I did tell my experience regarding why I cannot raise cattle next to 50 houses from my pasture. Somebody asked me if I'd ever lost newborn calves to coyotes. What is the relevance of that question? We're talking about children and cattle, not coyotes and cattle. It was just a divisionary, placating tactic. So you're putting me out of the cattle business. 10 years ago, I put $25,000 in lotment and cattle working and loading facilities. I just turned 60 years old, and this is the time of a farmer's life you get things finally paid down where you can put some money away for retirement. I knew from my father, a farmer, that when I started farming, it would take a long time before I could save money in this business. Farming requires intense investment of time and money. I am at the point of my farming career when I can maybe put some money away for retirement. Without raising cattle, that vision is going to be greatly reduced, as age and money make it not feasible to start again or relocate. More importantly, Iowa's interests in people like me should not be mowed over by the process that occurred here. I've been farming this property that's going to be redeveloped for the past 25 years. It is approximately 85 acres that is tillable, 64 of which will raise as good a crop as any land in Story County, and I have records to prove it. The southeast quarter has 21 tillable acres and is an average producer. The diversity of tillable and pasture give it that ability. When crops are low, livestock is usually high or vice versa. The planning and zoning staff said in their report that the financial effect on the property will be negligible. Nobody asked me that question, and it does directly affect me. This is the kind of farmland that was meant to be preserved under Story County C2C grants. The owner made a case for why this property is because it's running out of lot. That is not true. There are hundreds of acres owned by the belt that are closer to the Ames where they should be building according to the C2C. In addition, there is a danger presented by the motor vehicles that come with residential development and the farm equipment that currently exists in this area. 170th Street is the north border of the property. This is the farm-to-market road. There are many tractors and wagons pulling their produce to town. A few neighbors I have talked to said they were very concerned about a projected 700 more vehicles a day on the road to try to navigate among. A couple of people even sent me emails back in 2018. I know that some drivers coming out of the development will be young and not have life experience to deal with the slow-moving farm equipment. Because of the increase in traffic, already with more people living in the area, I've already had near accidents as some people do not respect the size and slow traveling speed of agriculture equipment. The people of the development will need to travel primarily to Ames or Gilbert on this road for their work or other requirements. My final point, I feel, be covered has to be the lack of transparency when it comes to what is legally developable property according to Story County law. The LISA score and the initial determinant of what is or is not able to be rezoned. Only after a score is determined and must be below a fixed number are other factors to be considered. John Johnson asked the head of the planning and zoning staff, Jerry Moore, in 2018, how the site value for the LISA score is calculated. John was told would not give out that information. It's confidential, classified, or somehow proprietary information. This information taxpayers paid for and must be available upon request. I made a request under the open records act to obtain evidence-based information on what was supported the decision that made contrary to overall interest in Story County. I found there were some highly questionable coziness between the developer of the property and the chair of the Board of Supervisors, along with an absence of information that was specifically requested, such as notes, phone calls, meetings of planning and zoning staff, both with or without the developers. I did receive a few emails between the board chairman, Rick Sanders, and Kirk Friedrich, the developer, called each other partner and stating I would work my end through emails. Also, there is an email telling Kirk, good job with working on Laura Holtz to swear a vote in favor of the rezoning, as she apparently must not have been on board early on. We are still in the process of reverse engineering what occurred and why. There is a tragic lack of candor here, which has provoked us even more. In recent emails between John Johnson and various people working for Story County, John tried to get the formula for the lease and site values of each quarter of the property. John was told by Jerry Moore that such formulas didn't exist. That seemed like that enabled them to manipulate a site value to meet the desired end. We also question why are not each quarter of this section of land figured as equal number of acres. When one quarter is one point away from being disqualified for residential development, this can make a very significant difference in the values. We actually believe this one quarter is more than 3 points over the disqualification value, number based on an assessment of the governmental expert we have turned to for advice. There is also a blank on the information for site value of each quarter that is not filled out on the lease of land evaluation and site assessment for this property. If this page is not to be filled out, why is it there? Did they not want us to see the value? The relationship between the county and the developer was very clearly not appropriately at arm's length, the county being charged to be the independent overseer of assuring that the county's rules and regulations were followed. I am addressing this with the FBI, as is my brother-in-law, a former federal prosecutor. These issues have not been addressed properly, but I can assure you they will be in the media and possibly in the court are not proper, fully developed answers given to address these issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Rory. Next, we have David Stein. David, are you on the phone?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, great. So I'm David Stein. I'm a watershed coordinator here in Story County. I just wanted to make sure that all the bases were covered when it came to that prairie remnant that's in the area. So as I was reading through Tom Rossberg's report, he stressed that this is just a preliminary report back in the winter of 2018, and he would need another round more in the summer when things are blooming to fully assess the extent of these prairie remnants and just the natural area on that flat. And I just wanted to make sure that that was going to be completed and just make sure that, again, all of the bases were covered when taking a look at that prairie remnant. Taking a look at the map where it was mapped out and surveyed, it seems that lots 1 through 28 were kind of left alone during that initial assessment. So I just wanted to make sure that either County Conservation or Tom Rossberg or anyone had taken a look back there just to make sure that, again, all those bases were covered and the extent of those prairie remnants were fully mapped out. That was just my concern.
Thank you, David. After we're done with the public hearing, I'll ask Mike or Amelia to comment on that. But we'll go on now to John Johnson. John, are you on the phone? John, if you're on the phone, can you please unmute yourself? Yes.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, thank you, John.
Okay, I forgot to press star 6. My apologies.
Okay, that's fine. Thanks.
My name is John Johnson, along with my brother Jeff. We own the property immediately north of this planned development. And I do have one question, initially anyhow. I'd like to direct this question to all three supervisors individually and to Planning and Development Director Moore. I would like to also ask if this question be answered in a yes or no response. And Chairman Murphy, I'm going to ask you if you would conduct a roll call for each individual's yes or no response to the following question.
I think that will be up to people if they want to answer the question. This is really a public comment, not a question and answer kind of thing, but we'll listen to your question.
In your opinion, in December of 2018, did the decision to approve Story County rezoning ordinance number 280 comply with Story County zoning laws and adhere to the goals and principles set forth in the Story County Cornerstone Capstone Comprehensive Plan for land use in the county?
I'll let you continue, John, if you have some other comments to make, and then we may, in discussion, address
I will have further comments continued upon this question. So I really would like the question answered now.
I think that's something that we're really going to be deliberating on, and that will be after the public hearing. The public hearing is the opportunity for you, and if you have further questions and you want to give us your additional questions, that would be fine, but I think the deliberation of the board members is separate from the public hearing, John.
Okay, that's unfortunate because I really would like to hear the opinion on that question. Because it appears as though the board supervisors really don't have to answer to anyone. I guess an additional question I would have is, this is really probably directed at all three supervisors, but particularly at Supervisor Olson. Is it contingent upon the board supervisors to have the prerogative to disregard county ordinances in order to assure a developer's profitability?
Supervisor Olson has heard your question. Do you have some other questions that you'd like to share with us?
I kind of like to hear her answer that question right now because that was her reason for saying that the board of supervisors decided to make this a 70-house entity as opposed to the recommendations of the planning and development staff, which is where I'm getting at the question. The planning and development staff said they based their recommendations upon the zoning ordinances of Story County and the comprehensive plan. And now it appears as though the board of supervisors can just disregard those zoning ordinances in order to assure the developer a profitability.
So I'll be happy to answer after the public hearing is over.
Okay, and John, I'm taking that as you making a comment, and I'm writing your comments down in my notes. I appreciate that. Any other comments that you have about the process, we will or about this application in general, we will certainly consider. But it's not a back and forth at this point. Do you have some other?
Okay.
Okay. Do you have some other?
I do. I just want to remind the three supervisors that in the original recommendations to the board of supervisors in December of 2018, planning and development staff stated that only three of the four quarter quarters could be developed based on user evaluation. Then the planning and development staff recommended that the housing density match and not exceed that of the density of the university development to the south, which you stated is 14 houses per quarter quarter. The planning and development staff then proceeded to recommend no more than 56 houses on this development. And this is where my real confusion begins. While I may not have been the best math student in school, I still believe that 3 times 14 equals 42 and not 56. The planning and development justification for 56 houses was that we must consider all four quarter quarters, even though one quarter cannot be rezoned. So if we apply the same planning and development logic to the quarter section that Eagle Ridge development exists on, there are a total of 16 houses in that quarter section. So therefore, as I calculate the housing density for Eagle Ridge quarter section, based on your logic, there would be 4 houses per quarter quarter. To use a comparable standard to use for future developments to match the existing character of the surrounding area, and that's taken directly from the C2C plan, about matching the existing area, the existing surrounding area. I guess I'd also like to discuss the LEPA methodology that Mr. Ryder just referred to. For whatever reason, planning and development has decided not to be forthcoming with information we are seeking. I was always told that you had to support any assigned value with verifiable data. And we were told the average site value was a computer-generated number from which there is no verifiable data. So, just so the supervisors appreciate our concern on the LISA scores, the Northeast Quarter section had a LISA score of 266. County Roads and Ordinances state that any land with a LISA value of 267 or greater cannot be rezoned. The only value that varied on all 4 quarter quarters, LISA score computation, was the average site value. A number that we were told is non-verifiable data. So I guess you can understand our concern. You're talking about something that was rezoned based on one point, and we can't get the data to verify the numbers that came up with, 68 value on the Northeast Quarter Quarter. And you say, why is this important? Well, what Mr. Friedrich failed to mention in the deal about profitability was that this land sale was contingent upon the surrounding rezoning. It was never, the final sale was never consummated until after the rezoning was approved. And the only way that this Northeast Quarter had not been approved, we would not be having this meeting today because the land sale wouldn't have happened, and there would not have been the ability to build houses on that Northeast Quarter Quarter.
Do you have any other comments?
I guess I would just again ask why, what changed for the planning and development staff where they seem to support the zoning ordinances of Story County and the goals and principles of the C2C plan in 2018, but now they've abandoned it totally.
I did.
Anything else?
Pardon? Somebody else?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Okay, so I received a text here. Just wants to make a correction or Gilbert's vote was not unanimous. Not everyone voted to waive, and apparently the Gilbert vote was 3-1. So, and I did not get a name with that particular person who commented.
And I also was told last night that they did not recommend approval, that they waived their subdivision right, and the reason was because they do not have in their long-range plan to develop this land. So it, they didn't, that was my understanding from the mayor. So that consistent with that clarification, I didn't know what the vote was.
They did discuss it.
But they waived.
So they waived it because when you look at their long-range plan and the areas they're looking at developing or annexing or working with in the future, it does not go out all the way to County Line Road. That's 2 miles away from Gilbert right now. Okay. Were there any other text messages? Were there any other people besides the people who sent in a text who are on the phone who wanted to make a comment during the public hearing?
They have to unmute their phone.
And please remember to unmute your phone if you do want to make a comment.
Well, just got a text here from John Gady. Prairie Valley has 86 acres of land when you subtract the green belt. The 70 units has a density of 0.86 units per acre, consistent with Eagle Ridge at 0.63 density. And he had texted earlier that also, sorry, that saying there are 14 units in Eagle Ridge, there are 14 units on 22 acres, excluding out lot areas, and it does have that density of 0.63 units.
I understood there were 14 houses on a 4x4, which is 40 acres.
And I'm just reading off what's
well,
on here.
I read it from the planning and development report in 2018 says that there are 14 houses on 40 acres, correct?
I know for sure that we were looking at the entire development, the entire 160 acres, even though there was no intent to develop the southwest quarter, but taking into account the density that was in the Eagle Ridge development and applying that was what was being proposed. That's what we were trying to match up. Because as Liz mentioned, that's a big task in reviewing these requests to rezone is to determine whether or not the zoning change would be consistent with the existing land uses. And, you know, that's why we were focusing on that Eagle Ridge development on the south side of the creek.
So, Jerry, just for clarification, so you're saying with when you were looking at Eagle Ridge then and how you made that determination, that's how you came about with approving through planning and development the 70?
No, we were recommending 56 total for the entire 160 acres.
Okay.
That's what our recommendation is.
56 for the 168.
Correct.
Okay, is there anybody else?
Chair, this is John Gay. I think you are correct about that Eagle Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
There are 14 lots in that 40 acres.
Correct.
The number that I'm referencing is when you subtract out what I would be considering a large portion, 18 acres of it, which is in the Squaw kind of the Greenbelt area, that density then, to be comparable, is 0.63 units per acre.
I have not seen anybody do that before in looking at Eagle Ridge and making a comparison here.
And to be fair, if you would look at, you know, this development, then you'd have to take the full 160 acres to be comparable to Eagle Ridge. And when you do the math on that, it's less than Eagle Ridge. It's 0.44 units per acre.
Which is what you guys have up on your screen.
And the focus today is not whether or not the land should be rezoned from A1 to R1. That changes are taking place. So we're trying to move forward with what was established back in 2018.
Is there anybody else? Is there anybody else who wants to make a comment? I'll wait a little bit. Hearing nobody else, I will close the public session. There's about a public hearing, I'm sorry. And turn to the supervisors. What's your pleasure here? What would you want to have some discussion of something? We've heard a lot of information. Do you want to have discussion before we entertain motion?
I would like to at least have a little say something. My name has come up here. Okay. So first of all, my name came up in recognition with, I guess, an email or a couple of emails discovered in an FOI request. If I understood it correctly, it was Mr. Friedrich congratulating Mr. Sanders for getting me to sway my opinion. And I would just like to note, first of all, that Mr. Sanders and I never had a discussion outside of the board table about this particular situation. First of all, Chapter 21 does not allow supervisors to have other than ministerial discussions. Second of all, if you followed the media over the last few years, Mr. Sanders and I did not have a truly, let's chat, collegial relationship. So I just want to assure you, sir, that Mr. Sanders, at the time, you know, Supervisor Sanders, never said anything about this development to me. I was contacted by Mr. Friedrich, I think, once, and I went over to take a look, as did all three supervisors individually, to look at the plans. and I was contacted once, I believe, by Mr. Friedrich by phone, just for some follow-up on this. Okay. I think I heard the second question to be something about related in general to the powers of the supervisors and our authority versus what are ordinances and versus what is a C2C plan, which is, of course, a plan. Yes, the actual answer is that the reason the three supervisors are sitting here is to make decisions about when a local ordinance or a local plan should be varied from. We have no ability, and this is my own personal, I'm not an attorney, so gentlemen, please understand that. But it's been my understanding that 20 years as a journalist covering local government, plus then my 3 years plus sitting on this board, that yes, the legislative body, who we are, the decision-making body, have the ability to look at what are our laws, what is local, and to make that the decision whether we're going to do a decision that varies from what may be on paper on a local level. And this certainly comes with zoning. It's why zoning comes to us. It's why these decisions come to us, and that's how the state legislature wrote the law. The next question has to do with, I'm going to broaden it, wasn't the question itself, but I'd like to recall to everybody in December of 2018 how I made my decision. My decision was made upon, it was said to us very clearly that if this land was not used in this way on this offer, that there was, they were going to construct a cable that would meet the appropriateness of rural next to rural. But in looking at the various scenarios involved, for me as one supervisor representing and doing what I felt was best for the citizens of Story County, especially the citizens in that particular area and that township, which is so close to the city of Ames, I definitely felt that looking at a subdivision was a better alternative than looking at a large confinement operation on this land. That also weighed right into the fact that we had these very rare natural remnants, prairie remnants. The CAPO is not going to be any better on them, as we would have no ability to try and carve out with Mr. Dotson. If you remember Mr. Dotson and his sister, they had to liquidate this property because she was ill and receiving care. So I did make my decision based upon factors other than the C2C plan. And so that leads into what I said today, or what was, yeah, I did say about the priciness of the land. No. It's not a factor about allowing solely those additional lots, because that's how it factored out for the developer to make a profit. I looked at it as that allowing those lots allowed us the option of stopping the confinement operation from being there and still protecting those remnants. Thank you to my colleagues for allowing me to make my position very clear from 2018 and how it is still today.
Supervisor Hedden, do you have anything you'd like to say?
Well, I've appreciated the staff that have presented today and all the listeners that have been on the call and the individuals that spoke during the public hearing and their inputs. I just want to make sure that they are all being listened to and heard in regards to what is being presented before us today. I guess the several of my comments or questions have been answered throughout the, 3.5 hours that we've been sitting here and listening, especially when we've gone ahead and maybe not in order necessarily how things have come along. We've gone back and gone, moved forward, but much of my questions have gotten answered. I do have to say, I do just some of the things that have come up that just give me a little pause yet of just kind of still going through my mind is I appreciate the clarification on the increase in lots and how that came about. I do have a concern with the turning lane. And I guess lastly, two other concerns is there's always a financial impact that would impact the county and suffer a potential financial impact that may impact the county. Some of it may be in regards to the conservation and as to the cost that they would have to incur. I think Mike referenced roughly $8,000 annually and that $25,000 initial. So I'm just kind of putting that out there as a reminder out there. And then the Gilbert with the statement that they have not been looking to develop out to, I gotta get my directions, to the west, but compared to the areas that they are currently looking at. Now, at this point, I just wanted to say that those are some of the things that just rose out there as probably four things that just kind of stuck in my head as part of the consideration. I do think the fact that we kind of fleshed out what we meant by the use restrictions in the easements and what that means, and in particular the 21 years that more definitive with the covenants, but that how you could potentially go about to extend those covenants. So that gave you some comfortability in that. I guess that's all that I have to say at this particular time. But those are just some of the things that rose to my thoughts to the end of the process that were just a few highlights.
Okay. I look at this and I think there's some land that we're dealing with here that has, there are a lot of impacts on. I heard the developer say that land had been used harshly and that the prairie remnants aren't what they might have been otherwise. But then I also look at all the conservation plan, all the things that are being done here. And what they are really is mitigation efforts to mitigate the damage that developing this land could do to those prairie remnants. I never see a whole lot of cattle on that land. You know, maybe 20 head, something like that. Those prairie remnants have been there. I don't see how a lot of water flows off that land right now because that land is all in grass. Most of it is. There's some row crop, but most of that is grass or CRP. I don't see what's, you know, how all the water quality things we're talking about seem to be more to mitigate the impact of development rather than to improve what's there now. I also, I have concerns about the density. I continue to have concerns about the density. I know that we're not dealing with the depth right now. The zoning decision was made. However, we're being asked to look at something that takes more of the land out of R1 and puts that into not part of the residential development. So I see the things that have happened since the previous board made its decisions on December 2018 have changed somewhat. I have traffic concerns. I also have concerns for the neighbors. I don't know if that was a, if there was a, I think I do remember some remark being made, well, maybe you just put a CAFO up then, but I don't think that was serious. I don't know if it was or not. I have no way of knowing if that was a serious remark made a year and a half ago or that was a remark made out of frustration. I also look around, and I think this prairie is xeric. It's dry. All the things that have to happen if there's going to be developments to keep that prairie dry I think some of it's quite tenuous. When we talk about covenants and we talk about HOAs and we talk about some of that, it's a huge educational issue. It could be the county taking an HOA to court and saying you're not abiding by this or that, or not by somebody's not abiding by an easement. The site distances are a concern. I'm also concerned from the neighbor to the north with the driveway from a large development coming right up against his driveway. He's got a cattle operation. He's got a home there. I think that's going to be not the, the be all and end all concern, but that's a concern. The farmer to the east who's looking at his livestock operation and saying, how can I keep doing this? I guess where I am at this is I'm looking at the three things that we have in front of us to look at. We have two resolutions and we have an ordinance. One of the resolutions is zoning changes and C2C change. I probably will vote for that because I think it's land that should be protected. The other one is approving the plat for 70 houses. As I stated, I know that there was a decision made by a previous board, but I think things have changed. I think it's becoming more dense. I probably will not vote for that. The ordinance, Amelia, am I correct? The ordinance is regarding the zoning change and the CTC change. So that I have no problem with. Those are my thoughts, and I wanted to be able to express them before I voted, but I was going to say one last thing. We're talking about, I hear the developer and I hear people say, this will be a unique thing. There's a unique thing there right now. There are not many pastures. There's not very much ag land in this county anymore that isn't in row crops and isn't plowed. We seem to, when we look at the LISA, we look at one thing, corn suitability ratio. We are looking at our land right now in a very narrow lens. You know, is this good for row crops and corn? Well, there's other agricultural uses, and this is an agricultural use right now that unfortunately we are squeezing out the places where a farmer can raise cattle on a pasture, because all our pastures are going to development. That's a sad thing to see. I'm done. I don't know if that answered any of the questions that anybody had. I do want to finally thank staff, particularly planning and development staff and the Planning and Zoning Commission. They have done a lot of work on this. I also want to thank conservation. Mike Cox, the director, and I want to thank the Conservation Board. They've been given a task here, and they've done a wonderful job. And Amelia, I know you've worked with Mike on this. You folks have done a good job with the task that you were given. And just because I don't agree with the task doesn't mean that I don't appreciate that.
And the County Attorney's Office.
And the County Attorney's Office, Ethan Sarah, how could I forget you? You've done a lot of work on this, too. Probably other people I'm forgetting. Emily did work on this before she left us. And our Planning and Zoning, two commissions. And Environmental Health, Margaret has been working on that. Anybody else who's?
Engineering,
Darren. Yes, thank you, Darren, for your work on the traffic study part of this. And, it's been a team effort. And like I said, just because I don't necessarily agree with the task as it was put in front of you doesn't mean that I don't acknowledge and appreciate all the good work all of you have done. So that's all I needed to say. Thank you. So what's your pleasure, Board?
So I'm going to make the motion for, Lisa, it's your turn. Do you want to make or not make? Otherwise, I'll make a motion. You can go ahead. All right. So I'm going to start here with the rezoning and the C2C amendment. So I move option one The Story County Board of Supervisors approved the proposed Story County zoning map amendment from A1 Agriculture District and R1 Transitional Residential District to the GB-C Greenbelt Conservation District. And the C2C Future Land Use Map designation from the rural residential area to the agricultural conservation area, and from the rural residential area and the agricultural conservation area to the natural resource area, as put forth in case RE-701-20 on first consideration and sets the second consideration for Tuesday, May 26, 2020.
That's R-E-Z, Z as in zebra.
Sorry,
that's
with
okay.
Only one I now see. Okay, sorry, RE-01-20.
Is there a second to the motion?
Is that the ordinance? It's the ordinance.
It's the rezoning. It actually is the resolution that we've been given and the ordinance.
Well, I don't want to say there's two resolutions on here.
The second resolution is the plat.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So this is
the one for the
2090. Just to change it to the residential.
To the Greenbelt Conservation.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. I will second that.
Motion by Olson, second by Hedden. Is there any further discussion? If not, Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. And the next motion would encompass the resolution 20.91, correct, Amelia?
Yes. And I can put the conditions
back up for. Let's look at them.
Yeah.
Because we may need to have some discussion before.
And then 1 and 5 were amended by staff from the planning and zoning commission presentation.
Would you like Amelia to go through those just briefly, the conditions?
Well, she kind of ran them once already.
Why don't you read them really quickly for the sake of people on the phone?
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
The first condition recommended by the planning and zoning commission was that the conservation board took action on this request, and they have. Staff has recommended to remove that. The second is cleanup of some construction debris on one of the lots. The third is that a protected subdrain be added to lot 52 on the preliminary plat. The fourth is that I know the edge of the flat subdrain plan could change based on septic and location based on testing. The fifth is that the Board of Supervisors shall determine if the applicant is paid for a turn light, and that is amended by staff from the Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation. The sixth is that the applicant shall encourage homeowners to have a security system for early detection of fire. The seventh is that a right turn lane on 500 at 170th is the final phase of development. The board shall consider with that final flat that if it's needed and who should pay for it at that point. And the eighth is that the developer is responsible if road connections are made with any development in the future.
So maybe we should have some discussion about the right turn lane on 170th onto 500.
And I put up the amended conditions from staff on the PowerPoint screen.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and the county engineer is recommending this development so far, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Discussion on the, should we first just discuss the turn lane? Payment for the turn lane before we do a motion. Okay, who wants to start?
I guess I can. I read through, what was in the report, and I recognize that right now it's talking about kind of a low volume, but I'm also very well aware of other parts of the county that I think that was probably done initially, and we are seeing high volumes of traffic that were kind of unanticipated. So I certainly think, my personal opinion of being proactive on that, as Representative Olson stated earlier, and I think, Supervisor Olson, and I think Supervisor Merkin kind of referenced that as well. I certainly concur with that if anything's going to move forward, that we need to have something proactive. Because my concern is no pun intended, but down the road, there is going to be some significant challenges, and then trying to address it at that particular time not only becomes harder to have access to that land, but also the increasing costs that is incurred at that particular time as well.
So I made my position pretty clear about some kind of need there. The issue of fairness here. I am willing to look at, instead of cash having to come up into an escrow account, this is a local developer with a company that has developed for many decades, so through generations. So I feel very comfortable that they're going to be around as long as there's some development. So I would be comfortable with saying that we want the developer and or any other developers in the area at the time of that phase two is completed on this addition, but we, for all we know, there's another developer that we're going to end up having buying some land who would end up needing to pay for part of this cost, okay? So that I would be comfortable if the county attorney worked with Mr. Friedrich's attorney, okay, to come up with some kind of financial letter of credit on this, and that we take a look at that being at, say, the $25,000 level, which is the lower level, and say that then the board that exists at the time phase two is getting finished, take a look and see whether if at that time there's any other developers who are contributing to the traffic and could pick up part of that cost. I do want to point out, Mr. Gay had said something about fair, and about 85% of the need already, or of the warranty already being in that is yes, and a lot of them are from another development in Mr. Friedrich's. So, and then he's got the one also, Mr. Friedrich's also developing down there on George Washington, right, just in Cameron School Road. So I do feel what I've just suggested is pretty fair, considering that right now a lot of the traffic is kind of flowing through Friedrich developments, and yet someone has to step forward.
It might be hard. I understand what you're saying about maybe there will be future development, but it might be hard to craft something that anticipates who a future developer might be and how it would be prorated, because we don't even have a traffic study on a proposed future development.
We don't. So if that's not acceptable to the other two of you, or not acceptable to our county attorney, or, you know, I'm just trying to throw out as liberal consideration as possible based upon we don't have a crystal ball.
So as a process question, if the county attorney and whether the attorney or the developer negotiate on this, does that then come back to the board or no?
I don't think we want to. I think we want to make a decision here if we can.
Yeah, okay. That's why
I'm asking. I don't think we're asking our county attorney to negotiate. Oh. We're asking our county attorney to draft the document.
Okay.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. I think that's where the confusion was coming in. So.
Okay. So then maybe the motion itself would be: I move that we ask the county attorney or office to draft a document requiring a letter of credit in the amount of $25,000. That's going to the low end of the estimate. Okay. To be assigned to pay for the right turn lane on 170th at 500th as part of the preliminary plat consideration here today, to be activated upon completion of the second phase.
Okay. I will second that. I want to make sure that I had formulated it in my head there. It was awfully long.
The motion, as I heard it, assumes
that we would be accepting the class. That's one of the concerns about it. I'm wondering if it isn't part of a motion to accept the plat and ask the county attorney to draft. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying.
I see. Okay. Okay. I can add at the end of my motion if I can do my own.
Or do you want to withdraw your motion?
I can withdraw it and try to restate it with.
Yes. That might be easier.
Okay. I can do that. Or let me withdraw my motion at this particular point in time. Sorry, Shelly, she just got it all typed up.
So, are you looking at making a motion for number three?
Yes. Then I am going to make a motion, option three for the major subdivision preliminary plat. That I move we approve the proposed major subdivision preliminary plat as put forth in case SUB 06-20, with conditions as recommended by the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission and amended by staff, and to direct the county attorney to create.
Do you want me to read what I was?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Here's what I heard, the rest of the motion. I wrote it down just as. Ask the county attorney.
Can you give it to us?
I probably have to read it. Sorry. It makes it that your handwriting is better than mine. Okay. And ask the county attorney to draft a document requiring a letter of credit in the amount of $25,000 to be assigned to pay for the right turn lane on 170th Street onto 500th Avenue to be activated upon the completion of the second phase of the subdivision.
I will second.
Okay. You want to
look at it? No, I got it, but I second it so I can ask some questions because I know that's what Charlotte likes to just make sure we do our processing correct. So within your motion, your motion was approving the 70 lots. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And then also stating that the $25,000 for a potential right turn on there sounds like that would be on the developer.
Correct.
But we are unsure if the cost is beyond that. Let's say it's $75,000 or $100,000. Mm-hmm. That's then on the county? All of that amount on the county?
Thank you. No. What I intended was for the amount to be on the developer, but I picked the $25,000
right.
thinking it would be less onerous on the developer now, but you're right. Regardless of the cost, we could be assigned to the developer. So maybe if I'd accept a friendly motion to just strike the dollar amount?
Yeah, I guess I wasn't.
So you're hoping to strike?
The amended amount, although I don't know if we can just demand a letter of credit. I mean,
yeah,
we want a dollar amount.
Why don't you change the amount to not to exceed $75,000 because that's his
higher end.
Yeah, our range is 25 to 75. Change it in an amount not to exceed $75,000.
I'm amending that motion in an amount not to exceed $75,000.
Do I need to second that? Her change. I'm making sure I'm on track with her on that. So I'll second her change. You've got that. But then before, I'm looking at all my notes. I still go back and forth. There's so many good things that I see with this project. With the conservation and kind of tying in with more trails and stuff, I'm struggling with the increase in lot sizes. And I think listening to the farmers who spoke as well, but also
the fact that Gilbert said they are not, it is not in their plan to grow out to the west. Yeah. So it's just, that's just sitting in my head is, okay, you're going to have the consolidation areas or the focus areas that Gilbert already has in their plans right now, and then you're going to have something just kind of sitting out in the wings. And is that really kind of that, is that that smart move? Is that that smart growth or the smart direction that we should be looking at? I'm not sure on that.
If I might rely back upon my childhood growing up, because my mother was a realtor. I think, I don't know if you guys knew that, but was a sold real estate for 30-some years, 20-some years, something. And one of just the tenets of real estate is that it depends upon two things. A buyer who is willing to put property up and a seller who is willing to pay the price to buy. So in an ideal situation, Gilbert's plan is to go a certain direction. And Lisa's plan is to go a certain direction. In fact, they want to go to the west and the south. But that wasn't where, as I wrote as a journalist for almost 2 decades, wasn't where a lot of the buyers who were coming to town wanted to buy for eight, okay? And then the availability of the land, more land was being freed up in the north and northwest of eight, okay? So we've seen this happen, and I just want to make that comment that there are plans. And everybody does try to plan, which is where I came back to part of my vote in 2018, which was this land was for sale, and Mr. Dotson did say, I'm not going to question his veracity or intent or the depth of his seriousness there, but it was said, look, I've got to liquidate some land here, this land here, and these are my two options right now. And so I, based upon a little bit of my experiences in my childhood and watching sales, you know, a real estate or whatever, sometimes you got to make the decision based upon what the reality is. So thank you. I'll stop and get off my soapbox about real estate.
You have a plan or you don't have a plan. You have zoning ordinance, you have a plan, or you don't have a plan.
I guess the question I do have additional, and I don't know if this would be fall on the homeowner, if it would fall on the farmer, or what, but Mr. Riley brought up about, I believe, like children, if they came to his to where his livestock is at, and I'm not sure if Mr. Johnson kind of reference that as well. I guess I'm kind of wondering, you know, if there were a situation, where does liability fall? Does it fall on the farmer? Does it fall on the county? Does it fall on the homeowner? And maybe it's just an unknown at this particular time.
Were you asking the question, Lisa, and thoughts about adding a condition that requires a developer to put up a 6-foot fence? I believe that's what we can erect, or an 8-foot fence, right? Okay.
Yeah, rear 8, I think.
Okay, so we 8-foot fence along that east part of it. There's a road that separates, that serves as somewhat a barrier for the 150 and 170, but are you thinking along those lines, adding that as a condition to the development?
Yeah, I mean, that is one thing that does come to mind is, you know, how do you want to balance? If you're looking at development, you want to also balance the farmers that are working their land or have their cattle there. Their concerns for liability, and that is a very real situation. When my kids were little, and if you're kind of out in the country, or you know, when they're at grandma and grandpa's and stuff, and they want to go running right to the cattle or whatever, and you're like, no, you know,
they're not that little sweet little kitty cat, you know. Little kids don't necessarily recognize, they see this big animal, but they don't really kind of recognize that and the implications that may have. They just want to go over and see it, thinking of it as being like in the petting zoo and stuff. And that is a real concern that I would have.
I understand. I'd be supportive of a protective measure like a fence along the east side. I don't know about to the north side, like I said, with the road there and what kind of deep dish or whatever. Plus, the kids, they're going to have, they can always just run out via the entrance. I mean, you know, so
there's a
limit to the
trailer.
What?
She won't make it.
Well, you know, but I mean, you know, as far as, you know, the controlling it, where there is an ability to control on the east side, and there are impacts, and they don't even have to be, you know, small kids. I'm recalling what the planning and zoning had to deal with, I guess, back in, I think, 2016 and 2017, with a large orchard that started amplifying events. And it turned out cows, a dairy that was just across the major highway from them, the cows wouldn't come in to milk. I mean, that was what the statement was at the time. I don't know if that is actual true, but I see the planning staff nodding. So there are impacts anytime you put less rural next to rural. So, yeah. So I'd be open to something like a fence that would be, and then an extra condition and add on to the motion.
Yeah, just for safety. Yeah, no, I've just been kind of continuing to consider, you know, kind of talking out loud. Yes, I mean, the fence would be supportive or would be preferable in that. I'm just trying, again, I go back to the number of lots, and I guess where was it? Mr. Grady was trying to compare kind of an apples to apples when looking at Eagle Ridge and the lot numbers and their calculations, how they came about that when you added in the other areas of land. So I appreciate that. That does kind of put things into a little bit more perspective. And I appreciate Laura's viewpoint too about Gilbert heading out, you know, having some vision to go out to the west.
And
will it future-wise that? I don't know. Or is it going to be just a standalone development out there? I think the comment that they said, what was it? Was that in a text that said that as of right now, their long-range plan is not to go up there, and it's at least 2 miles away from where they currently.
The government long-range plan is to do commercial industrial to the east and residential to the south, and this is to the west.
Right.
They have no. I think they talked about annexing a little bit of land at one point, just to kind of square off. City, but they're not
zoning
development.
So
it doesn't. Yeah, no, it's going
to
be.
Yeah, and I think that's just it's everything's here and it's out here.
But isn't that the point of rural residential?
No, that was going to be my next comment. I get that there are people that want to live in rural residential and have kind of that feeling of a little bit more of being out in that country area, but yet having some closer neighbors, so you've got that community feeling as to where you're at. It's just really trying to figure out the balance and is this the right thing to do. I appreciate that conservation, their involvement that they would have in here, the comments of trails. I'm just trying to figure out all the trails that would be really connected. Because you're kind of connecting just around kind of the new subdivision. You're not connecting into another trail system that we currently have. I'm just trying to think what other trail system would we be going to and what would be development.
I would be thinking the connection to look at is actually to the east and maybe they're on the gravel road for a little bit, 170th, but then they're going to hook up with the trail that we paved, the county paved the trail to go north into Gilbert.
But it's not
on High Gretton at all.
High Gretton, it's just, yeah, but it's not in the it's not in conservation plan.
Okay.
There's a lot of plans that it's not in the plan I'm looking at right now, and I just remind the other supervisors that we're looking at up to $500,000 a mile for bike trails, paved bike trails, $300,000 to $500,000, depending on if you're dealing with the road better or dead for it already. So you're talking about $1 million for a paved trail there. And you're also talking about where does it go? Look at the shoulder out there. There's virtually, you know, there's no shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Are you buying more right away? I mean, you're saying, okay, in this quarter here, we're asking the developer to put aside that land for trail, but then you've got all this other property here you would have to buy up to connect to that. You'd have to buy up farmland that's already planted.
Or they're riding on 170th.
Oh, God, no.
Then tell traffic.
170th is like riding on GW Carver.
Okay.
There's no shoulders. There's no good options that don't cost boots and bucks. Get a bike trail from there to
Gilbert. And I guess lastly, on the subdivision itself, is it the homeowners that have to hire out someone private then to do their like snow removal?
I'm assuming that'll be up to the homeowners when they get it formed. And I think what you're talking about are these public roads or private roads. That's
right.
What you're really asking.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good question.
They're publicly dedicated and publicly accepted and privately maintained.
So it'd be an HOA, just like all the other rural developments we have, either if they're small ones, people just go together and do it, or large ones, just make sure
that they hire somebody. They hire somebody. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I was thinking, I'm not sure that the county would have the ability to maintain roads on that. I think you can see I'm just really struggling
mm-hmm.
on this, and I've got those two particular items, or actually three, when you add in the trails, that I just... Sorry, I'm thinking longer.
Go back to longer.
Okay. Sorry, I'm just kind of...
Doris made a motion, found a couple amendments of it, and did you second for purposes of discussion?
Yes, she did. Yes, okay. Yes.
So
yeah, when
motion,
I said that, I did that. So
we
I
have a
discuss.
Motion, and I seconded. So
and that's what amended, and she seconded.
Yes.
Right,
and
right, for,
so
discuss,
okay.
For discussion. And with your amendment was then the, oh, up to $75,000. Yeah, the dollar amount. There are many things to say yes to, and yet I see many things to say no to on this as well. this is where you'd like to have about five more board members to help you, or at least get a little bit more brainstorming and get their input on that as well. Because I do appreciate all the work that everyone has put into this and all the data that has been provided. I guess it comes down to kind of trying to see if you have the vision for that growth going out to the west versus where Gilbert is at, which is in Franklin Township. And I guess one, and maybe we did, and I'm not sure if they were one of the comments on there, because I don't know, Amelia, if you gave the individual's names or whatever, but did we have someone like from Franklin Township, like a township trustee or anyone make any particular comments or raise any concerns or anyone else? We do have the individuals that did comment today, but I'm just wondering if the township trustees have any.
No, Commissioner Flynn and Zoning Commissioner Dunmore is also a township trustee. Mm-hmm. I don't think you want to get those roles.
Oh, sure. No, I appreciate that.
Staff has not received any communications officially from township trustees. Is that correct?
We did get communication from the trustees when the proposal was being made.
They did not address it.
But I've not heard from any of them.
I want to let you know I've received a text from Kurt Friedrich and a text from Mike Cox. Okay? Kurt Friedrich is saying, I am supportive of a fence on the east designed to be mutually agreed and built when homes are sold. Mike Cox has said, I can clarify some of the trails if you'd like.
How long do we want to keep going here? Do you want more clarification on the trails?
I guess I would. I'd like a little bit more clarification if that's okay.
Is the supportive of the fence as developers? I think
okay,
we can get
go
on
back.
The phone.
Yeah.
I'm gonna unmute and I'm gonna ask people to be brief in the comments and respond to the specific things that we're talking about. I don't know if I need to unmute. Kurt, would you say something?
All participants are muted.
Laura says you just texted that you're supportive of a fence on the east. Are you talking about that at developer's cost?
Yes.
And how far to the north and the south then?
So, to my mind, I think what we should do is we should follow a similar protocol to what we have set up to date. And as you know, we have certain areas that are adjacent to the remnants that were identified for protection that we will be installing fence on with approval of the final plat. Then the other areas where fence is prescribed, those would be installed when homes are built and sold. And it seems to me logical that we would follow that same recipe and here on the east side, because this is not being platted now. This is being platted in phases. And the first phase will be in the north and west. And then as we progressively move down through the project, that we would then install fencing along the east boundary of the property adjacent to Mr. Riley's property. And it would be at the cost of the developer or the homeowner, and it would be a design that would be approved by us, by the developer. That's how we typically approve fencing designs. And one of the things that we worked through with at great length with Mike was the design, and Conservation Board was the design of the fence, and it needed to be a split rail fence as to not disrupt views. But inside of split rail fencing, we can have muted wire, if you will. We've done this at Cameron Estates and other subdivisions that are in the country, because views are valuable and important to the people that will be living there. But we can also make them solid in terms of impenetrable by adding the wire mesh.
Wire mesh.
Yes. So to my mind, that would be, I don't think that would go across the outlot areas, but it would be adjacent to and behind the homes, the lots that are being built there, because those waterways, it wouldn't make sense to, in my opinion, to have fencing structures then across those drainage areas as well. Does that make sense?
Well, this is getting entirely too detailed, is what I'm thinking. To get into a motion or to do right now, it's too bad we didn't have this done before, because I'm thinking things about a split rail fence with mesh isn't going to keep Angus cattle in. Does the farmer get to have another fence to keep his cattle in, and this fence to keep kids out? And I just don't know. There's too many details here to think about, you know, what we're doing, and to agree on very specifics here. And Jerry,
So that's where I would suggest that we would agree on the design here, that would be a part of final plat. I don't think we need to
decide it today. Okay, let me ask you this question, Kurt. Will people actually be living there before the final plat?
No.
No. Okay, then that's doable?
Yes.
I'm asking Jerry. I'm sorry, I'm looking at Jerry right now. Jerry Moore.
What question?
Is that doable, that you folks work with the developer for a fence, and also I would say talk with Mr. Riley to make sure that both needs are being met with this fence, to keep kids out and to keep cattle in. And how's this fence going to work, and with this one working, he has a fence. I just think if that becomes a condition of the final plat, we can do it that way.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, let me do that. And I just wanted to have Kurt weigh in on his thoughts for the existing fence line that's there. I mean, do you have any intentions of impacting or changing the existing fence line that's being used for to keep in the cattle?
I did not, Jerry. We intended to just to leave it as is. I didn't want to disrupt that situation.
Okay. I don't know what's going to make, you know, I don't know what Mr. Riley is going to think is going to make it okay for him to still have his livestock operation versus get kind of squeezed out of his livelihood here. But I think
he told me that.
Yes, Kurt.
Thank you. No, I am open to working with my neighbor. Rory and I have worked well. In my opinion, up to this point, and I know we don't necessarily see eye to eye on the project, because it is a change, obviously, in terms of what currently exists. But we've been in a working relationship in terms of he's continued to farm the ground, and I've allowed him to have cattle on the ground here as we continue to work through this process. So like with anything, there will be, I think, should be some reasonable cooperation and probably some compromise here to move things forward here with Mr. Riley. So I'm happy to work through that process.
Okay, thanks.
Kurt, Kurt, I'm sorry. Kurt, can I just ask a clarification on your comment? You just said you've allowed Mr. Riley to continue to have cattle.
He's rented the land to
him. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So Mr. Dodson had a long-time relationship with Rory Riley in terms of renting the land, and we just continued that at the same terms that Mr. Dodson had in place.
Got you. Thank you.
And I do believe that Mr. Riley has moved many of his cattle to another. He found a different site to move cattle to. He could verify that, but that's what he had shared with me.
Okay, let's okay. go on to any more questions of Kurt. If not, let's
no.
go on to Mike Cox. Mike, you wanted to talk about the trail.
Well, yes, thank you. Just to clarify, there are two types of trails being contemplated here. One is the internal trail that we talked about, which would just be a mown grass trail. And then two is the trail easements that are contemplated on the preliminary plat. The reason that those easements are contemplated is that the CPC plan includes or has embedded in it a long-range trails plan. That trails plan calls for trails along 170th and County Line Road or 500 to be done at some point. Trails are often decades in the offing, and they take quite a bit of time to put together. Land is a big issue, and then on top of that, Linda, as you said, the high construction costs. So we're not anticipating constructing or paving those trails along the periphery of this development if it's approved right now. In the long run, we'd be looking at just those easements so that when we do have some connectivity and can make some further more impactful and meaningful trails, then that would be considered as funding is available. But right now, we're not looking at constructing that. More so, we wanted the easements in place in order to do that when the time is right.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Yep.
Okay, so those are addressing two of the concerns that you have. If we're going to consider this motion, it sounds like we have another amendment.
Yes. So I want to make sure I would get this correctly. So an amendment would be to include fencing when the homes are, would it be when the homes are built and or
as part of final plat?
Okay, yeah. So include fencing as part of final plat approval.
Would you want to say fencing to the east?
Or sorry, yes, to include fencing to the east as part of final plat approval.
So you're offering that as amendment to the motion on the floor.
Yes.
I accept that.
Okay.
And to be shown on the final plat.
To be shown on the final plat.
I accept that too.
I'll amend that to say to be shown on the final plat.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Are there any other concerns you had you'd like to see if we can address?
I think for me, it comes down to still, is it right to be... Oh,
all participants are muted, and they can unmute themselves.
No, you're fine. No, I just started to hear somebody speak, so I appreciate you muting that. Is it the right thing to do of moving or of building to the west? And I understand... Supervisor Murphy, you've had made your statement of where you're at on that, and Supervisor Olson, I continue to see the pros and cons of both, and I appreciate all the kind of negotiations that have gone on to get us to where we're at this particular time. So I don't know that I have any more questions, with one exception. So since you said it comes before, again, for a second reading on May 26th, is that another vote? And it's another public hearing?
Just for the zoning ordinance.
Oh, it's just the Green Belt Conservation Area, not the flat area. Okay, okay, okay. We've kind of intertwined all of these in our discussions today, so.
Yeah.
I know you're all waiting in anticipation. I'm just going to apologize for being.
Take the time that you need.
I am trying to be helpful. This is Jerry, Planning and Development. The issue about whether or not a land use should be changed from a rural state to the new state, which is residential use, that decision was made in 2018.
Right.
So that land was rezoned, the northwest, the northeast, and the southeast portions were rezoned to R1 to accommodate a proposed development. And so really what's before you right now with this plat is whether or not that development meets the county development standards. And that really should be...
Thank you. Yes, thank you for that reminder. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, any further discussion?
No.
So we have a motion. I'm not going to ask you to read it, Shelley. I think we understand what it entails. It's basically number 3 up there, with the county attorney drafting a letter. Credit and amount not to exceed $75,000 for the right turn lane, plus a fence at the developer's cost being part of the final plat approval and to be shown on the final plat. That's significant enough. Okay. Let's see. Laura, was your motion originally right? Olson?
Aye.
Stevens?
Aye.
Merkin? No. Motion carries. Anything else you have for us?
No, just the next item.
And that
wouldn't
be a residential
person.
Oh, yeah.
I think
I'm for it. I'm sorry. Sorry, Lisa. No, you're okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I know.
Lisa, good afternoon. It's not evening yet.
Not yet.
Right, the fence.
Okay, we are on to item 14, additional items. It's the open records policy that was presented to us very recently and has some revisions. Just present to us with revisions. Would you like to I've looked at them. I'm fine. Do either of the supervisors need to have a discussion of the revisions?
I still am not comfortable with us charging the actual cost. I'd like to put a limit on that cost. And I'd like to make that an affordable cost per hour. I'd originally proposed 15. If you want to inch it up a bit, that probably would work. But once again, I'll say it one more and last time. These are the people's records. They already they paid months for them either to be created or to be considered, and to charge a onerous fee, what I consider onerous fee, to the public to then locate them or to just redact them seems almost a bit of an insult to the people who own them in the first place.
So you have one thing that you're wanting to be different in this. I'm going to make a suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
Alyssa has already gone through this and has, at our direction from the last meeting, made revisions. If you are wanting a further revision, do you want to make a motion?
Sure. I'll make a motion.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I'll make a motion that we approve this with a revision in the amount to be charged per hour for retrieval and or oversight or retraction to not exceed $25 an hour. Actual cost for $25 per hour.
Is there a second?
I'm okay with where it currently is at.
Okay, motion dies for lack of a second. So.
Mm-hmm.
And is there another motion to consider?
I would move that we approve the open the revised open records revised draft policy.
4-7 day review.
Oh, 4-7 day review.
I will give you an opportunity to second it if you want to.
No.
I will second the motion. Any further discussion? Sutton?
Aye.
Olson?
Nay.
Merkin, aye. Motion carries.
So I will send this out. Please park ahead to elected officials, have them give comments, write a due date, and then I'll work with the chair. I will not be present in the meeting.
That's right. Okay. Excellent. Thank you. Thank you for the work. Appreciate it. Amelia, you're back. You're still here.
Yeah.
Still standing, as they say.
I have a PowerPoint, but...
No, okay. Oh, we're okay.
The residential parcel on the district creating two lots. One condition recommended because there is flood plain on the property. Before a new house can be constructed, we'd like to ensure the driving element of the flood plain to ensure access.
That's it?
The surveyor has to come out to determine that. The property owner intends to sell right now. That lot is really just for mortgage purposes at this point, but it is certainly creating an element.
A lot of mortgage companies won't lend on more than an acre and a half or two. I remember that from my mortgage days. Yeah, because then it gets into, is it farm or hobby farm or whatever. So
also need a flood plain permit, right?
Oh, yeah, and I will need a flood plain permit for that work, too. If it's determined that it's not above the flood level.
Okay. Any other questions?
I believe the applicant may be on the line.
Do either of the supervisors have questions?
I don't at this particular time.
None. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Good job once again. That's explaining what and why.
Then we just need to approve resolution 20.96. I would entertain a motion.
So moved.
That's as put forth with conditions, correct?
Oh.
Yes, okay. Yes, I second.
Okay. Any further discussion? If not, Tedden?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Approved.
Thank you.
Amelia, you are free to go. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Heading on, I think we're almost ready to wrap up this meeting. Department reports, there are none. Other reports, there are none. Upcoming agenda items, anything anybody really needs to report there?
No, we already know about what I'm bringing on Friday from the courthouse committee.
Okay. Public forum number two, comments from the public on items not on this agenda. I think I'm going to unmute the phone just in case there's somebody who's not texting in who wants to say something.
All participants are muted. All participants are unmuted.
Okay, we are unmuted, so it's public forum number two. Is there anybody on the phone who would like to make a comment on items not on this agenda? Because the open meeting's law, we cannot act on them now, but we invite it a future meeting. So, anybody for a comment on public forum number two? Hearing none. Liaison assignments, committee meeting updates, and announcements from the supervisors. I suppose I could say some things, but it's 2:30. I'm pretty tired. Anything that's urgent right now that you need to speak about?
No, just updates on any. I mean, I don't have anything, just a lot of meetings that I could update everybody on Friday or next Tuesday.
Okay.
I have several meetings as well. I know, Laura, that you have your Justice Committee, kind of reopening committee meeting on Friday.
Friday afternoon.
So I'm like on you're funneling the information up to the group, the advisory group that I'm on or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we're meeting actually Thursday. But I think that's just to get some of the initial survey information to look at while at the more local level,
getting
that information.
You know, Judge Curry, you know, I think sent back the first three responses about no. We're not going to be ready on June 1. Why? Because, excuse me, did you need to?
I was just wondering if this is ministerial.
Sure.
Oh.
Okay. All right. I was just
thinking people have been on the phone for a long time.
Okay.
Oh.
Never mind.
Okay. I mean, if you want to talk about it now, it's fine. But
no, it's fine.
I think there's probably people who don't
care. Who don't care.
That's fine.
Yeah. So if there's nothing else, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Hedden?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Okay, we are adjourned. Thank you.
So,
I'm sorry. I just